field to speak here. So I'm going to be talking about joint work with Natalie Paquette. We have two papers on this in the last couple of months. We're going to explain how there are certain interesting vertex algebras which tell you about features of scattering amplitudes of self-dualizing Mills theory. So the first thing I want to discuss is what is self-dualizing Mills theory. You can't hear, but I have a microphone. You can't. So even with the microphone, you can't hear?
I can hear in the back.
Okay. So, self-dualizing Mills theory is a very simple theory, which has the Lagrangian B wedge F, right, where B is an anti-self-dual 2 form. And we notice that by varying B, you see the equations of motion are that FA minus equals 0. So let's just introduce a Lagrange multiplier to enforce this equation. And of course, it's related to the ordinary Young-Mills Lagrangian with the standard F wedge star F. Sure. And the relation is, if we take the self-dual Young-Mills, we add on G Young-Mills squared times trace B squared, they become equivalent. This is something completely standard. I learned about it from the work of Lionel Mason about 15 years ago, but I think it goes back to at least the 80s. Basically, the equivalence is just by this field redefinition here. So what I want to do is to explain how amplitudes and form factors of self-dualizing Mills theory are controlled by a certain vertex algebra. So this is our take on the celestial holography program developed by Andy Strominger and his collaborators. So it's pretty closely related to their work. But in our approach, it only works sometimes. We're going to encounter an interesting anomaly which prevents it from working for all gauge groups. Before we go on to discuss the vertex algebra, let me explain a little bit about what self-dualizing Mills is like. So firstly, self-dualizing Young-Mills is way easier than full Young-Mills. It's a CFT. There's no running coupling constant, no beta function. It is, however, non-unitary. If one looks at the scattering amplitudes only occur at one loop. There's no tree level, no higher loop amplitudes. There's a formula for that for them. Any computation you can do in self-dualizing Young-Mills, it terminates. All Feynman diagram expansions are finite. So this makes it seem like it's a little boring, but it tells you a surprising amount about amplitudes and correlation functions of Fourier Mills theory. For instance, as I'll derive in the next slide, one might be interested in the correlation functions of some component of the curvature in Young-Mills theory. And the leading order term in the coupling constant is given by a correlator of self-dualizing Mills. The higher terms aren't, but the leading order term is. So many people have looked at this theory over the years, and people like to dream that it's a completely solvable theory. So Andrei Losev suggested this is the simplest 4D CFT. So I want to argue in this talk that it is integrable, but only in special cases and with some additional fields. OK, so people presumably have never studied this theory very much, or like members of the audience. So let me explain a little bit about the Feynman diagrammatics. There's two kinds of fields, B, which is labeled by a minus, and the gauge field, which I'm labeled by a plus. And the plus and the minus will be because B is related to negative velocity states of gauge theory and A to positive velocity states. The interaction, there's a plus plus minus interaction. That comes from B FA, because the curvature is a piece quadratic in A. And there's a minus plus propagator coming from the BDA term. Now, if we want to deform it to full Yang-Mills, I'm going to add on a minus minus vertex corresponding to trace B squared. Now, for example, suppose I wanted to do a computation in gauge theory in QCD. By writing QCD in this first order formulation, I'd say, well, how might I compute the two-point function of this operator here? The way I would do it, I'd write that operator as a blob, and I just sum over Feynman diagrams, and you see the only contributions for self-dual Yang-Mills are the ones which look like this. It happens to be at five loops. And this is the lowest order contribution. And the higher order contributions, which have this trace B squared vertex, they always occur at higher loops. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not a Lagrangian, you have to integrate it over it. Okay. So, as we said, now, if I want to get full QCD from this, I would add on the operator B squared, but I would put it at, if I bring down, you know, E to the trace B squared, E to the integral of the trace B squared, you can expand it, but the first term is I integrate b squared over its position, and the second term is a double integral where I have two copies of trace b squared, and so on. And this is how I would understand full Yang-Mills as a deformation of this. But the thing I want to understand in this talk is scattering amplitudes. And I want to understand scattering amplitudes at this order in the expansion here, where I've only inserted one copy of trace B squared.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I mean, if you integrate out B from exponential B greater than F, we will be integrating over flat connections, right?
No, because it's B wedge F A minus. B is B is an anti-self-dual two form. So you get F minus wedge F minus once you integrate FB.
To repeat the question.
So Pavel was asking if you integrate FB, do you not find the equation that the curvature vanishes? And I was saying no, because B is an anti-self-dual two form, not an arbitrary two form. Yes. Well, the space of non-unitary theories is not Hausdorff, just like the space of algebras is not Hausdorff. So it's kind of like a Riesz construction, and we take the limit and we rescale our operators in such a way that this is what happens. Yeah. I'll compute the Hamiltonian and radial quantization, and it's a triangular matrix.
Is it theory conformal?
Yes.
But is it also topological or not?
It's not topological, but it is conformal.
So how many degrees of freedom?
I mean, the same as Yang-Mills theory.
But the Lagrangian is the equation of motion is first order, not second order.
Yes, but absolutely. So, you know, if I suppose I was to look at the phase space, right? In the second order formalism, I would look at the gauge field or the curvature and its normal derivative. And here the normal derivative is replaced by B. So it's the same degrees of freedom.
So it's roughly half of the number of degrees of freedom
No, it's the same degrees of freedom. I mean, suppose I reduce to one dimension, I view it as a quantum mechanical theory. All I'm doing is writing it as a first order quantum mechanics with PDQ. So, does that make sense?
Well, if I compare PDQ with PDQ plus DQ square,
uh-huh,
I would say that the number of degrees of freedom is doubled.
Is?
No.
I mean,
well, in quantum mechanics, it's kind of hard to tell because it's a finite number. No, dq squared.
Oh, dq squared. I mean, let me, maybe that would.
Maybe I completely missed that. Ignore the question.
The phase space is the same. So the kinematics is the same. It's just there's a different Hamiltonian, if that helps.
space is the same
Hilbert? Yes, the Hilbert space should be the same Hilbert space. The Hamiltonian is different. Let me explain how to compute QCD scattering amplitudes to low order by using self-dual angles with the insertion of this operator. The way it works, I'll use the diagrammatics as before, and I'm only allowing myself to insert one operator because I want to think of the insertions of one operator, what's called form factors, and that's what I'm interested in. So at tree level, I insert this operator here. Operator there, which has minus minus coming into it. And if you think about the Feynman diagrams, you'll see, well, the external lines, there's two minuses and an arbitrary number of plus. So these are the standard MHV amplitudes. A one loop, a similar diagrammatic tells us that the things we compute from self-dual angles will have one minus, and a two loop still have all plus. As I said, the goal is to compute these amplitudes using a vertex algebra. So I prepared this talk for a really mathy audience. So I hope some people might be bored by these two slides, but in physics, people have this very, very compact notation for describing amplitudes, and to an outsider, it's a bit difficult to read their papers because of this. So let me explain how they do it. The vector representation of spin 4 is a tensor product of the two spin representations. Now, we're studying on-shell states of a massless theory, so we're studying null vectors, like momentum will be null. And as is well known, this is, you know, a conic in C4. Once we projectivize, it's CP1 times CP1. So every such null vector can be written as a product of two spinners. Like, the null vectors are precisely the decomposable tensors. So in the literature, a state is parameterized by a pair of spinners. So explicitly, what you do is you say, OK, given a pair of spinners, I want to produce a linearized solution of the equations of motion. And there's just a formula for that. So here we want to produce, since we're looking up to gauge equivalence, we might as well look at either a self-dual or an anti-self-dual 2-form, which is closed. And all you do is you take the usual kind of, this piece here is just the usual e to the p dot x. And this piece here is some anti-self-dual or self-dual 2-form that you check that this is closed. So these are the states one wants to scatter. And what kind of thing is it? Well, if I want to scatter a state, I want to scatter n states, I'm going to insert n elements of S plus and n elements of S minus. And also, I'm going to do something with the Lie algebra indices. And I will just have a big meromorphic function on this manifold here of complex dimension 4n. Now, typically, these are incredibly nasty and might involve transcendental functions, but the ones that will appear in this talk will be rational. And the notation people use are my functions will be SO4 invariant. So there's two basic things you can do. If I take the ith and jth spinners of positive velocity, I can take their inner product like this, of negative velocity like that. So for each pair of indices, I and j, I have two basic functions, and every other function will be built in terms of these. So here's a classic formula. In the 80s, Park and Taylor computed the tree-level amplitudes with two negative velocity. These are the same ones we've been discussing. And they showed it's this explicit rational function on this manifold. Okay, any questions before I move on to the vertex algebras? Oh, yes, sorry. E is an element of SL. So you look at this expression, and you notice that it has a denominator, so it has some singularities. So what Strominger and his collaborators said is that, you know, these look a little bit like they could be the singularities that you see in a 2D CFT. And then you might hope, is there a CFT so that these expressions are the correlators? And, well, they have a nice paper, Guevara, Himwich, Page, and Strominger, cite the right paper, where they look at subjugating mills with states of positive velocity, and they check that indeed the amplitudes are do look like correlators of a CFT. But to understand what's going on, it's going to be helpful to remember that there's some C star symmetry. I take my two spinners, if I scale them both by opposite weights, I get the same momentum. So I can scale one of my spinners, so it looks like 1 comma z, where z is a point in C. And then the Park-Hiller formula looks like this. This is just a rational function on C to the n, and evidently this looks exactly like the correlators of a vertex algebra. There was a really nice paper by Nair in the 80s who made this observation first. Okay. So the general construction we're going to do, the first at tree level, and then we'll run into a problem, and then we'll figure out how to solve the problem and do it at loop level. We'll show that these form factors, including form factors for the operator trace p squared, which will be this Park-Hiller expression at tree level, will show that these form factors are all correlation functions of a certain vertex algebra. So here's the vertex algebra at tree level. Extremely simple. It's just the Kass-Moody at level 0 for this infinite dimensional Lie algebra. Take semigeric product of g plus g joule, adjoin two variables, v1 and v2, and I take its Kass-Moody at level 0, so no central extension. So what does that look like? Well, if I just take the coefficients of the powers of v1 and v2, I get some elements j, mn, and j tilde, mn. These are in g joule, and it has the following OPEs. There's jj, jj tilde, but the j tilde OPEs are 0 just because that's how I define the Lie bracket in g plus g dual. And then at tree level, the result is any form factor of self-tree Lie mills is a correlator of this really simple vertex algebra. Last, so other questions at this stage? Is everybody lost? To be able to make such a statement, you know, form factors, I have a bunch of states in my gauge theory. In correlation functions, I have a bunch of local operators in my chiral algebra, or my vertex algebra. To be able to make such a statement, we want to know that these are the same, that is indeed true. The generators of the vacuum module are the states of the gauge theory. So if we remember, a state is something which depends on two spinners, lambda tilde, and another spinner, which I've turned into z in CP1. So my state corresponding to lambda tilde and z will be this element of the vertex algebra here, which is a generating function of my JMNs. So in other words, the two elements, like the two spinners, one of them tells me where I'm putting my operator in CP1, and the other one tells me the coefficients of these JMNs that appear. The positive velocity states are the J's, and the negative velocity states are the J's. Now, there's another feature one wants to have. I wanted to identify form factors with correlation functions. So form factors need two things. They need a bunch of states that I'm inserting, and they also need a local operator. So the next piece of the dictionary will be to say, what is the local operator on the other side? So here we have this very easy proposition. The conformal blocks of this vertex algebra are the space of local operators of self-tuning mills as a representation of SO4 time scaling. So for me, the conformal block is a way of giving correlation functions. I'm following Bailenson and Drinfeld's terminology in their book here. And they also have a formula for the conformal blocks of anything that's presented as a kind of Lie algebra. So we just take their formula, and they say it's Lie algebra cohomology of something, which is cohomology of CP1 with something, coefficients in something. And then you notice it can be written as the cohomology of twister space, with coefficients in this sheaf. And then you can apply the Penrose-Ward correspondence, which tells you that these are related to local operators of self-dual cage theory. So this is like a very easy result that just comes from sticking together two classic results, Penrose and Ward and Bailenson and Drinfeld.
Sorry, Kevin, it's conformal blocks on what surface?
CP1.
On P1.
Okay, so now we have enough. We've been able to match all of the ingredients. So I said a conformal block, that's the data needed to define correlation functions compatible with all OPEs. Now, a local operator gives a conformal block, so it gives correlation functions of all my generators in my vertex algebra. On the other hand, my generators in my vertex algebra also can be identified with states. So then I can just say, okay, this expression depends on exactly the same data as this expression. This expression depends on a local operator and a bunch of states. This one depends on a conformal block and a bunch of generators of the vertex algebra. The proposition is these are the same, so that the form factors match the correlators of the vertex algebra. This is all tree level, so it's pretty easy. And just as an exercise, let's rederive the Park-Taylor formula. So trace B squared, this is a local operator. So it must give some conformal blocks, some way of defining correlation functions. And we think a little bit about the symmetries of the problem, and we see, OK, trace B squared, and the only thing it can do to two insertions, J tilde Z1, J tilde Z2, must give you Z1 minus Z2 squared, just by symmetry considerations. And then we think, what does it do to N insertions? Well, the OPEs say that the OPE of J tilde and J tilde is 0, and J with J tilde has a Casimir OPE. So just by a simple inductive argument, you do induction on N, you find that the correlation functions are exactly the Park-Taylor formula. So anybody who's bored and who likes algebra can go away and do this. It's kind of fun. And you can compute all other tree-level form factors of self-dual Lie mills in this way. Okay. So before I move on to discuss quantum theory, are there any questions?
Where is this coming from? Oh, sorry. What's your intuition behind this, and why would you guess that the formalism would have this shape?
Yeah, I feel like a defect of this talk is that I've hidden many of the details. Everything comes from twister space. So like twister space is OR4 times CP1. My states on twister space are like a delta function times something. There are delta functions at points here. A local operator is a defect wrapping this CP1, and the states go in and hit it, and you can kind of see how it's going to work.
So, Kevin,
mm-hmm.
just so I understand the logic, the so far this is just some specific Kac-Moody algebra, right, that knows about twister space or something. Is that?
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess what you're going to tell us is now you're going to turn on loops and that will deform the Kac-Moody algebra?
Exactly. It'll either say, sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it can be deformed into a kind of quantum group. So the tree-level story is really pretty easy, and I don't think all that novel. So, okay. So let's, was there another question? So let's see, is there any chance that this can work at the quantum level? So if you only look at states of positive velocity that is built from A, then Guevara, Himmich, Pate, and Strominger showed yes. But if you include states of negative velocity too, then no, there is absolutely no chance it will work. There are several ways to see this. So one is, is kind of an answer to the question from Dan earlier. We can look at the matrix of anomalous dimensions in Salvador-Young mills. This is a CFT. Like any CFT, I can take a local operator and scale it to get a new local operator. That's a matrix. So if I look at the local operators of dimension 4, it's like trace b squared, trace f squared. It's really some 2x2 matrix, and it looks like this. There's a classical part where they scale as you expect, and then there's this weird piece where trace b squared becomes trace f squared. Now, this is a non-algebraic action of this group. And how could you possibly expect a vertex algebra? So you start with a vertex algebra, which has a C star action. It seems absurd that the C star action would become non-algebraic. That seems like it could never happen. But isn't I'm confused about this. I thought the logarithmic vertex algebra still had their OPEs were still meromorphic, but there were modules which braid in a logarithmic way. Yes, you get something, but if you adjoin such modules, you would also change the states. Oh, sorry. So Pavel was asking, what about a logarithmic vertex algebra? And I was saying that a logarithmic vertex algebra, it's like an ordinary vertex algebra, it just has a funny category of modules. And I wasn't really considering modules. So I don't think adjoining modules would really help you because that would add on more, you know, more conformal blocks and change what theory you get downstairs. So here's a better way to see this. So you can go back and look in the literature. So these singularities in the vertex algebra are what are called collinear singularities in the literature on QCD. So people study them really carefully in the 90s, and they still do. So it's a nice paper of Byrne, Dixon, Kossower, and also related work of Malin. And they computed one-loop QCD amplitudes, and they looked at the singularities when the two Zs come together. So what you can do is then go look at their formula and say, aha, let's take their expressions, throw them into the vertex algebra to deform it and see does it work. So their expressions lead to the following deformation of the OPE, where the 1-0 part and the 0-1 part get a second order pole, some coefficient, it's like 98 pi squared or something, times the negative velocity state. So then you go, does this define a vertex algebra? Answer, no, it does not define an associative vertex algebra. Associativity fails to hold. So the associativity relation, I think as everybody knows, is you look at this kind of thing, and you ask that that's equal to It's like a familiar change of quanta argument from vertex algebras. So you go compute this, and the two sides are just not the same. So you might think you can just give up, but it turns out that there is a solution to this problem. So the solution is, it's two solutions really. If you compute this as an associativity relation, you find that it's built from the symmetric tensor in the fourth power of G. So you can make things work if you add on matter, which lives in a representation, so that trace in the adjoint is equal to trace in that representation. So it should be a real representation. So for example, you can take SL2, and this is what's called NF equals 8, where I take 16 copies of the fundamental. Also SL3 with NF equals 9 works. So the second solution I'll talk about is mostly, which I'll mostly focus on here, is that you assume that trace of x to the fourth is proportional to trace of x squared squared. This happens for SL2, SL3, SO8 are the exceptional algebras. And then we can add on a new field, a funny kind of axion, where the Lagrangian is the one I started with, fourth order kinetic term. And this couples to the topological term. And there's some very specific constant here.
Can you explain, what is delta?
Oh, sorry, I'm using math notation. Delta is just the Laplacian.
Oh, this has four derivatives.
There's four derivatives, yes. The scale invariant. To be honest, I feel like the first way of canceling the anomaly is kind of much more physical. But we, for some reason, focused on the second way. Sorry, Anadi, I didn't quite hear.
Can you add a term with two derivatives of rho, a more standard?
I don't think so, no. I think you are free to, but I'm worried that would mess up the nice properties.
The rules of the game would say that this is not natural.
No, it's true, but you know, self-adjoint Mills, as you start with a theory that's non-unitary, so I feel like I've broken the rules already.
No, I think the starting point was okay. There's a lower dimension term which respects all your symmetries.
Ah, you're saying,
I meant natural in the technical sense.
I know, I see what you mean, but there's, hidden behind all this is twister space, right? And so we can ask, so the only terms we're allowed to really use are those which are local in twister space. Now it's very hard to build something local in twister space because anything involving, I think the term that you said would be something bilocal in twister space. I integrate a field in twister space over one curve, and then I take the product over two points in that curve. And that would really mess things up for me.
So like is there a symmetry that guarantees it? So imagine I didn't know where it came from. Is there, just looking at this Lagrangian, this action, is there a symmetry that excludes that term?
I think this would be excluded by a symmetry, but by thinking about integrable features. And a good thing to bear in mind, you know, if we're in two dimensions, there, you know, you can take something like the Zomologic of Sausage model. That's, ordinary quantum field theory perspective will say that's nuts, because I've taken some random metric, and there's infinitely many marginal deformations, and why this one? But it's selected by the fact that the S matrix is integrable. So I think that's the way to think about these models too. Is that convincing? Okay. So the result is that in either of these contexts, there is still a vertex algebra which quantizes the classical thing. I've also made it a bit bigger, such that, well, this is meant to say conformal blocks. Conformal blocks are still local operators, and correlation functions are still form factors. So the vertex algebra is no longer a Kass-Moody. It's kind of a quantum group. I'll describe it in the case where we have this funny axion field. So the way it works is you have the same things we had as before. And then we add on two new things which correspond to the field rho. And then there are certain OPEs which are kind of on enlightening, but whose there's some twister space derivation, and you just crank through and you find these expressions. So this slide is really on enlightening, but let's see if this will solve the problem. So the problem was, if we take the standard formula for the splitting amplitudes, for the collinear singularities, it didn't form a vertex algebra. So now, is that problem solved? Well, to do that, we look at the OPEs between J and J, and we can compute that they look this way. So we notice here, one of the terms in the OPE is a bilinear expression in the generators. So it's no longer a universal enveloping algebra. So which is why I wanted to call it kind of a quantum group. And then you can check that as long as the coefficients are correct, this associator we found earlier vanishes. And it vanishes only if this trace identity holds, and the way it cancels is by using these additional fields. So this is my idea of fun, to do this kind of algebra. And this cancellation is kind of a Green-Schwarz mechanism. Okay. The one fun feature of this story is that suppose I didn't know of this nice work of the 90s where people computed the QCD splitting amplitudes. You can re-derive it using algebra. You can say, just by using associativity, you can see that one of the terms has to have a double pole. Has to have this double pole with this J tilde in it. This is the same expression that was found by the people who studied QCD splitting amplitudes. And actually, if you're really careful, you can even find the same coefficient of 1 over 98 pi squared, 1 over 96 pi squared. We also see that this is not a vertex universal enveloping algebra anymore. So we have an argument based on twister space, which I've been kind of hiding, to show that this exists. I don't have a complete characterization. I'm hoping somebody who's good at algebra can show that the relations we have are sufficient. People who like the theory of quantum groups might notice that this vertex algebra looks a little bit like the affine Yangian, except has an extra parameter. And these guys, Sam Dehortry, I think Horthy, Olivia Schiffman, Reyes Lorgat, Farid Mousavi, and Yair Zhu, they were kind of independently looking at kind of similar things, but where we only take G instead of G plus G dual for completely different reasons. And they, for them, these vertex algebras appeared as related to the enumerative geometry of certain Clavier threefolds. Okay. So far, we've argued that, you know, tree level form factors are correlators of the vertex algebra, and that at one loop, as long as we can cancel a certain anomaly, sorry, at all loops, form factors are correlators of this quantized vertex algebra. So we can now we can ask, you know, can we just go and check this? We can go look in the literature and find formulas for QCD scattering amplitudes and try to match them with vertex algebra correlators. So there's a formula due to Malin from the 90s for the one loop all plus QCD amplitudes, and those are indeed correlators of this vertex algebra, just like the tree level Park Taylor one. So in principle, we should be able to find also the one loop amplitudes with one negative and one loop amplitudes with all, or sorry, one loop amplitudes with one negative and the two loop amplitudes with all plus. So for the one loop amplitudes with one negative, these were computed by Malin, Byrne, Chalmers, Dixon, and Kosauer in the 90s. They're super complicated. So when we do our computation, we find something that I can write in one line. So for them, you know, I think it takes several pages or something. So what seems to happen is, with the correct gauge group and matter, there's some amazing cancellation in their formulas so that it matches this. I'm trying to check this directly. I've managed in the very simplest case with 4 points, and it works, but only when the anomaly cancels. So our method will give some kind of expression which will be reasonably tractable for the two-loop amplitude, but I haven't gotten to the bottom of the computation yet. Okay, so unless there's any questions, I'll move on to the twister stuff, which is the origin of all this. Any questions? Okay, so secretly, you know, this is all coming from thinking about twister space. So as I said, twister space, so for context, twister space is this rank 2 vector bundle over CP1. And everything we're doing comes from thinking about the Penrose-Ward correspondence, which tells us that classically self-Julian Mills comes from holomorphic BF theory in twister space. So what Penrose and Ward did was look at the equations, solutions to the equations in motion and show that they were in bijection. So this turns out to be false at the quantum level, because holomorphic BF theory in twister space has an anomaly coming from this diagram. So for a physicist, I would say this diagram is not gauge invariant. But if I wanted to give a math argument, I would say, okay, the anomaly comes from some, you know, the curvature of some connection on a determinant line bundle. The determinant line bundle is the canonical bundle of the moduli of
E bundles in 3. I'm still behind. What is it an anomaly in?
It's a gauge anomaly on twister space.
So imagine again, I didn't know it. I just took this Lagrangian in 4 dimensions.
Yeah, if you took this Lagrangian in 4 dimensions, it would be pretty, like, there's no gauge anomaly in 4 dimensions, absolutely. So you might ask what feature of the 4-dimensional theory is spoiled by the anomaly? One way to see it is, if I have a local theory on twister space, then I can't have any scattering, because my states just fly past each other, they don't touch. But Self-Julian-Mills theory has scattering, and the scattering is, there's a one-loop four-point scattering process kind of controlled by this anomaly.
If I just look at this action as is, equation 4, the last term in equation 4.
Yes.
I think I know what it means. Is there anything wrong with this action?
No, it's perfectly fine. It's just not integrable.
So in what sense is there an anomaly?
No, I'm saying that the theory on twister, the four-dimensional theory is totally fine. It's the anomaly is not to the existence of the theory. In the four-dimensional space time, I'd say it's a perfectly fine theory, but is not is just not integrable, doesn't have any integral
properties.
Are you
saying that the theory is consistent, but the global symmetry underlying the integrability suffers from ABJ anomaly rather than a pure gauge anomaly? The word anomaly is used for many different things. That's
a problem.
No, it
is, yeah.
So I'm questioning whether this theory, the gauge theory makes sense, the gauge symmetry is fine, no anomaly there. It has some kind of a global symmetry underlying the integrability, and that global symmetry suffers from an ABJ anomaly.
I wouldn't necessarily say ABJ anomaly. It's more like these kind of celestial type vertex algebra symmetries suffer from an anomaly. Rather than not necessarily a global symmetry, which is. I think there's other contexts in which something similar happens. I don't understand very well. There's 2D theories which are classically integrable, but where integrability does not survive at the quantum level. I think it's similar to that. Okay, so how would I see this gauge anomaly on twister space? You would say, well, the determinant line bundle is the canonical bundle of moduli bundles. Then I just use the Gwathin-Riekwiemann-Rock formula, and it's a very trivial little calculation. Other ways you might see it, you might say, well, if I took my threefold mean elliptic curve across something, I'd be studying a 2D theory, which is a sigma model would target the moduli bundles, and that 2D theory has a well-known anomaly, which is not zero. So there's many ways one can see the issue. And so this anomaly is canceled by introducing a new field, which is a 2-1 form of twister space. So that the gauge variation of this diagram is equal to the gauge variation of this diagram. And as I said, it can also be canceled by introducing matter in an appropriate representation. I think I've gone a little too fast. Am I? Okay, I think I've gone way too fast. Sorry, guys. So I'm just about out of slides, so I maybe have to do something on the screen. So this anomaly cancellation method was, it's a version of the familiar Green-Schwarz mechanism, but C. Lee and I worked on this. And finally, once you have a nice holomorphic theory in twister space, very formal arguments allow you to build a vertex algebra. They tell you what its generators are. In principle, they tell you what the OBEs are. It's pretty tricky to compute them using this prescription, so we just use the associativity of them to constrain the OBEs. Maybe I'll try to address Natty's question a little bit here. So I want to make an analogy of these theories and familiar 2D integrable theories. Can people see the blackboard okay? Yeah. So in two-dimensional integral models, you have a symmetry of the Yang-in, or a related quantum group. And here we have a symmetry of this kind of quantized vertex algebra. To connect with the theme of the conference, in 2D integrability, we have topological line defects. this is one way to define what it means to be. So I have my 2D theory. And these are labeled by representations of the Yangian. And they're topological, you can move them around, and they can commute, they commute with each other. As a historical note, I feel like this, the study of topological line defects in 2D models by, you know, Baxter and so on in the late 60s, was really the first time non-invertible categorical symmetries appeared in the literature. So in these 4D models, there is something kind of similar. If I have a 2D CFT, which is chiral, and it contains a homomorphism, from this vertex algebra to this algebra of operators, then you can construct a semi-topological defect. So I wrote it on this slides. You just wrap a curve in twister space. This is the data you need to couple the theory on twister space. It gives you a defect on a curve in R4. And it's semi-topological, meaning on twister space, it evidently depends holomorphically on its position, so that if I place it on real space, I write it in these holomorphic coordinates, then it's independent of C bar. So these are semi-topological, and they will commute with each other. So, like, a concrete answer to Natty's question is, you know, what will the anomaly do? Well, you can write down these defects at the classical level, and classically you can move them past each other. Or at one loop, you can move them past each other, and then there'll be some problem where these defects won't commute with each other at the quantum level. So in that way, it's the anomaly is not a failure of existence, it's kind of a failure of integrability of the 4D model. Yeah, I think I don't really have much more to say, so I'll stop a little bit early for questions.
So this is maybe a very naive and potentially misguided comment, but so there used to be in the literature some string theory called the 2,0 string that Ogury and Vaffa developed. And one of the nice things about this is that, so its target space is 2 complex dimensional. And if you ask what the target space theory that these strings describe is, it's actually self-dual Yang-Mills.
Yeah, no, the same comment has been made to me by Cameron and others, and
is there a relation between this BOA and that
you
Welch?
Certainly hope so, but so there's some comments in that paper where they say it's like a topological A model on twister space. This is much more like a topological B model, so it's all kind of confusing. Yeah. So there should be some relationship, but I certainly don't understand.
I see. Okay, great. Thanks.